Good morning.
Good morning.
I am glad to be the person to welcome you to the second in a series of briefings about the Healthy Marriage Initiative being funded by the federal government. And I want to thank a number of people this morning for participating with us in that. I am Mary Myrick. I am the project director for the National Healthy Marriage Resource Center, a project that is funded by ACF and a number of private providers, including the Annie Casey Foundation. And as we begin this morning, I do want to thank some of our key sponsors. First, the Annie Casey Foundation. The Annie Casey Foundation is an ongoing partner of the Resource Center, and they are the sponsor of this policy briefing series. I want to thank the National Resource Center on Domestic Violence for hosting the meeting with us this morning. Obviously, I want to thank the Brookings Institution and bring you greetings from my colleague Ron Haskins, who couldn't be here today, and thank the Division of Children and Families Program for being a co-host with us on this series. I also want to recognize the collaborating partners who have been working with us to put this series together. So that includes the National Campaign on Teen Pregnancy, NCSL, CLASP, and Child Trends, and I thank each of those organizations for aligning with us to provide this information. And finally, I want to thank ACF, who provides overall support for the National Healthy Marriage Resource Center. So this morning, we actually just want to give you a glimpse of the thoughtful way that many healthy marriage programs are working with DV providers in federally funded programs to help families across this country. We want to talk about the way that they have gone about identifying domestic violence and also providing services and responding to DV when it presents in healthy marriage programs. The federal legislation and ACF both required some sort of interaction between healthy marriage programs and local domestic providers. When we launched this effort, many people in the field actually took an additional step, and they said, in addition to having some sort of required interaction, we'd like to build a relationship. So many of the providers at the local level have formed sort of PACs or developed protocols. Sometimes they develop contracts to formalize a working relationship between the two organizations. So they've actually gone farther than taking this mandate to have some sort of interaction, and they've built relationships and they've developed practices about how they might engage with one another. This process has been developing over time, and there's certainly it's been informed by what's happening at the local level, the services being offered by various marriage education providers, the services available through different DV providers has certainly informed what's able to happen in local communities. There's also been a lot of learning that's happened over time. In the beginning, there was a lot of attention paid by us and others to make sure that healthy marriage programs would be equipped to deal with domestic violence. So the National Healthy Marriage Center created a number of tools in partnership with the National Resource Center on Domestic Violence to provide the things that people would need to develop protocols, some guidance about building relationships, some screening tools, other things. And that was sort of where this process began. As people have gotten to know each other in local communities, however, things have become a little bit more vibrant. There are referrals sometimes back and forth between DV organizations and healthy marriage programs, where people are beginning to think about the best way to work cohesively together to serve individuals, couples, and families. And since 1999, I've worn a number of different hats in the healthy marriage arena, and I've had the opportunity to work closely with both of these fields. And over these last several years, I've been able to observe meaningful engagement between the leaders in the marriage arena and the healthy marriage field, in the domestic violence field. I've also extended my relationships and watched others in the DV community extend their relationships to local providers to begin to build the kind of relationships that actually benefit individuals and families. I've watched researchers study this issue and watched the important interaction between healthy marriage programs and domestic violence. And I've seen both groups grow and stretch in ways that were really more complex than we even anticipated they would be as we began. I've seen both groups get a better understanding about the kind of practices that, again, will benefit individuals, couples, and families. So, as I said, most healthy marriage programs have done more than was required of them. As they begin to approach their relationship and to build linkages with their local domestic providers. And you're going to hear about some of that today. There are some people that are doing an eight-hour program, and they're delivering basically information about healthy marriage to couples and individuals. And in those cases, they tend to provide information about resources in their local community around domestic violence. Today, you're going to hear from a number of programs that are longer-term interventions where there's more of an opportunity to engage with the couples or with the individuals over a period of time, and much more opportunity to engage really significant partnerships between the marriage and the DV community. So you're going to hear about some of those special programs this morning. As we begin, I'm going to turn the podium over to Patrick Patterson, who is the project director for the National Healthy Marriage Resource Center. He's going to give you a quick guide through the materials that you're provided this morning, and he will introduce this morning's moderator. So with that, I'll introduce Patrick, and I will thank you for taking time out of what I know is a very busy schedule on a Friday morning early, and appreciate you taking the time to be here. Patrick?
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
How's everybody?
Very good.
Good. Want to make sure we give you guys what you can expect to see today. A couple things I want to point out. If you have a binder, some of you were here for the first policy briefing that we did in May, so you might have received an insert. For those that received the full notebook, I just want to walk you through a couple things just to point out. On the first, behind the first tab, you'll see the agenda for today. We'll probably follow the agenda as it reads. The second tab is very important. For each of these policy briefings, what we try to do is put together a resource package that talks about the research in the field, but also practice behind each of these topics. So in tab two, you'll see materials specific to this policy briefing. So feel free to look at those. Later in the binder, you'll see there's a tab for our final for this year policy briefing. And so you'll hear about that later as we get ready to close out today's policy briefing. The second thing that I'll point your attention to is a CD that is in the front tab of your notebook. The timing of this couldn't be better. Earlier this year and parts of last year, we talked about with these two fields becoming so important to healthy marriage, how we might integrate best practices and lessons learned. And so behind the leadership of Ann Bernard and a team of folks working with her, we developed what we consider to be a five-volume, groundbreaking resource for programs, domestic violence, and healthy marriage regarding how these two fields work together. Just real quickly, it starts from essential finding out what the two fields are about, and the end of it is around disclosure and how you actually address that. This is very program friendly, very resource friendly for folks, and it's a resource for you guys. Since it is on CD, we've made available two hard copies that I'll put on the back table after we leave out if you want to thumb through it before you leave. But this is a monumental resource for programs to use throughout the country. It is also on the National Healthy Marriage Resource Center's website. So if you have colleagues who might want to have a copy of it or take a look at it, they can go to www.healthymarriageinfo.org to get copies of it downloaded for their benefit and usage. Final point that I'll make before I introduce Oliver, our moderator, is our first seminar, and this is kind of like planning a party, you don't know who's coming. It went very well in May, groundbreaking. We saw this as more or less a foundational series around what is healthy marriage. And so we are delighted to share this morning that on our website, we have a transcript and actual recording of the first seminar if you weren't able to come to that first one. Same website, www.healthymarriageinfo.org. Our moderator for this morning is Dr. Oliver Williams. Dr. Williams is an executive director of the Institute on Domestic Violence in the African American Community, a professor at the University of Minnesota School of Social Work, and someone who has worked for many years with individuals, families, and communities around domestic violence issues. He has been an incredible leader within the field, and we're delighted to have him as our moderator for this morning's congressional briefing. Dr. Williams?
I want to say that I'm delighted to be here and have the opportunity to be able to speak with you and moderate this very important panel. I want to tell you that I've learned something from the marriage field and from the domestic violence field and responsible father field. So I have the opportunity to be able to think these things through and report on some of the good work that's been done in terms of addressing these issues. It's an incredible opportunity to be here. I want to do a little housekeeping and just to say that there will be time for you to ask questions, that if you feel like you can't get your questions in, please write them down and hand them to one of us. We'll be around afterwards. And lastly, that if you will be around for probably for about 20 minutes afterwards. So if you have questions, please feel free to share your ideas and your thoughts with us about different concerns that come up. The first thing that I want to do is to get a chance to talk to you a bit about some of the folks that are sitting on the panel. And to say that this is an opportunity, this briefing is an opportunity for us to be able to share with you what we've learned and continue to learn about addressing domestic violence within the context of relationships and healthy relationships and marriage education programs. And on the panel, there are going to be two different panels. One panel, we will have Ann Menard. And Ann is the director of the National Resource Center on Domestic Violence in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. She's been doing ongoing explorations about some of the specific strategies used to identify and respond to domestic violence issues within these programs. And her bio, along with everyone else's bios, if you look in tab two of your binder, you'll get a chance to sort of read more about them. So we're not going to spend a lot of time going through everybody's bio. We also have Cassandra Coates Johnson, who's the director of the Family Services at the Center for Urban Families in Baltimore, and Lisa Nitsch at the Gateway Project Program Coordinator at the House of Ruth Program in Baltimore. And both these programs are in Baltimore, Maryland. And they will talk to us about their partnership and their important partnership, and I think groundbreaking partnership. And we keep talking to them about how we keep looking to them about their important work and how they're leading and are examples for other places around the country. But what brought them together and some of the struggles and successes they've experienced along the way. On the second panel, we will be looking at emerging issues. And I'll introduce Marlene Pearson and Jill Smith, and also Juan Carlos Arian a bit later. So let's get to it. So Ann Menard, would you do me a favor and review some of the issues that were raised by domestic violence advocates as the Federal Healthy Marriage Initiative was being designed? And discuss some of the concerns and issues of the administration and Congress. What were the concerns that were being raised by the domestic violence?
Thanks, Oliver, and I also appreciate the opportunity to be here with my colleagues. The issues that I'll quickly review are all described in more detail in one of the papers that's in your binder called It's Not Healthy If It's Not Safe, Responding to Domestic Violence Issues in Healthy Marriage Programs. It was done in 2005. Again, so I refer you to that. But let me quickly pull out some of the key issues that were raised as concerns. The first concern was that we must continue to underscore that the quality of relationships matters. Research is clear that on average, children do better when raised by two caring, economically stable, biological parents. Importantly, that same research tells us that outcomes for children are much less positive when there is high conflict or domestic violence in the family. And research and experience also tell us that many children raised by single parents or in extended families or other relationship structures formed by necessity or choice can and do thrive. So it's a complex picture, and we need to keep all pieces in front of us. Many domestic violence victims are single parents because they left a violent marriage or because they chose not to marry the abusive father of their children. As advocates representing the needs and interests of domestic violence victims, we are always deeply concerned about any program or policy that might unintentionally or by design stigmatize single parents or disrespect or devalue their efforts to create healthy and safe families for their children. Stigmatizing divorce or making divorce more difficult to obtain will de facto make it more difficult for some to leave a violent relationship. So we're also concerned about that. Other key questions raised during the initial healthy marriage debate included how and by whom would marriage education programs designed for largely white middle-class couples be adapted for culturally diverse low-income communities? What steps need to be taken to ensure that an individual or couple's decision to participate in a marriage strengthening program is voluntary and informed, particularly when recruitment or referral is linked to programs providing government benefits, such as TANF or public housing or Head Start. So that was another concern. Finally, at least for this morning, there was concern about how success will be measured by individual healthy marriage programs, but also at the community, state, and federal level. Obviously, simply counting an increase in marriage or a decrease in divorce over time tells us little about the quality of those relationships. For example, would we consider it a positive outcome if someone decides not to marry after attending a marriage education class and recognizes the abusive nature of the relationship they're currently in? And we'll get an answer to that a little bit later.
Very good. You know, Ann, there are a lot of programs that are receiving federal and state funds to do marriage education. What do we know about these programs and how they're addressing domestic violence?
Sure. I want to pause for a minute. Having used the word domestic violence several times, a lot of us have, I want to take a minute to define it because that's important as well. Domestic violence is most usefully understood to describe a pattern of abusive behaviors, physical, sexual, and psychological attacks, as well as coercive economic coercion that adults and adolescents used against an intimate partner. It is characterized by one partner's need to control the other and involves the use of a range of tactics, not just physical violence or not just some other, but a range of tactics that are really designed to secure and maintain that control. So under this definition of domestic violence, then, we can distinguish between singular acts of aggression or fighting between couples and the use of controlling tactics that are designed and do leave a partner intimidated and fearful. So how are these federally funded programs addressing domestic violence, as I just defined it? Connected to their receipt of federal funds, marriage education programs were required to demonstrate that they had consulted domestic violence experts and describe how they were ensuring that participation in their programs was voluntary. Programs were also encouraged to develop a protocol with domestic violence agencies in their area that specified how domestic violence would be identified and addressed to ensure the safety of participants. Depending on the federal funding source, some of the grantees were required to develop such protocols. What are the key elements of the response by healthy marriage programs? There are really six major elements. The first is creating safe opportunities to disclose domestic violence. Not just one opportunity, multiple opportunities to disclose that the relationship that a person is in includes abuse, whether that's at intake, during participation in the program, during follow-up. A second element is responding to disclosure in appropriate and culturally proficient ways. We've always said, do not ask about domestic violence unless you're prepared to respond to someone saying, yes, this is something that's happening to me. So that's a very important part of any response by healthy marriage programs. Another element is truth in advertising. And by that I mean being clear that healthy marriage education programs are not designed to address domestic violence programs. They're not designed as domestic violence interventions or other. And they're not designed to address other serious issues that affect relationships, such as substance abuse and mental health issues. And so it's important that the educational and nature of these programs be clear so that someone who's trying to assess whether it would be helpful for them and safe for them to participate with their partner understands the nature of the program. Another very important element that, as already has been mentioned, is training. And we've really talked about this, and Mary alluded to this, that we're really talking about cross-training. What is it that domestic violence programs need to understand about the healthy marriage program or relationship education program that's being offered so that they can provide good advice to people who are considering participating, but also so they can help design a protocol that makes sense for that particular program. Training is also important for healthy marriage program staff and volunteers so that they understand the dynamics of domestic violence and how the issues of domestic violence might arise within the context of their program. Protocol development has already been mentioned. Protocol development and implementation is really a process of thinking through, articulating, and training staff about how you are going to respond to domestic violence issues. And the last major element is partnership building between domestic violence and healthy marriage programs. Ideally, partnership building precedes all of the things that I've talked about, but in fact, it sometimes happens organically as all of those other things are happening. And again, Lisa and Cassandra are going to talk to you about that. I think I have a few more minutes to talk about what we've learned. I want to thank the Annie Casey Foundation, which provided some additional resources to us to actually talk to folks around the country who had gone through the process of protocol development. And we've learned a couple things. The first is that there's tremendous diversity across these programs. There are programs targeting different communities, you know, providing services to communities that look very different, individuals and couples that look very different. The settings in which services are provided are different. Some are church-based, some are community-based, some are within the context of a TANF program. So all of that matters as well. The curricula being used are also very different. Some are, as Mary said, 8-week programs. Others are more intense. They have different emphasis. The cultural competency or culturally specific nature of the curriculum or providers is also varies across the sites. The approaches to screening and assessment, how they raise the issues of domestic violence, explore it with potential participants or participants in their program varies. The strength of the partnership with their local domestic violence program also varies. And the availability of domestic violence resources in a particular community. It's hard to form a partnership with a domestic violence program if there's none in your community. The other thing we've learned is that because of all of this is the need for site-specific protocols and approaches. One size does not fit all. You really have to look at all of those things and find and figure out what makes the most sense and how best to proceed. The third thing we've learned is that the ongoing learning and adaptation. We can't describe it all. I mean, I can't describe all of the various things that people have learned and how they've used that to change their program, but I want to give you one example because it's a particularly exciting one. It was a Latino organization, one that was very connected and really of the community they were serving. They had been providing, they added marriage education to the range of social service programs they were offering to families, so they were a multi-service organization. Again, really, really rooted in the community. When we first talked to them about protocol, they said, you know, this really isn't an issue. Domestic violence really isn't an issue. We don't see it very often in our services. It didn't come up a lot. But they went ahead and they developed the protocol. And, you know, they were really great about that. And so they added some questions about domestic violence to their intake. Not many disclosures. They were primarily working with couples that were new to them. So these were not families that they had a lot of experience with. So these were couples that were new to them. And almost by accident, this was an 8-week program, almost by accident, once during the third week, they broke into gender-specific groups. So that they had the women and the men were talking about fatherhood and the women were talking about issues related to mothers. They took that opportunity to provide domestic violence information. A lot of disclosures. What was going on there? These were new families to them, and they were not going to tell about domestic violence until they trusted the agency that they were going to know what to do with that information. They also needed to. They also part of what supported their talking about domestic violence was the kind of connections and support they had from the other people in the group. So they now have incorporated that into their program design. Now at the third week of the program, they create that additional opportunity to disclose. And they feel really good about that because they're learning things that are important for them to understand about the families they're working with. Two other quick things that we've learned, that the process of creating protocols is as important as the protocols itself. Even healthy marriage programs, and we heard this from them, that initially resisted the development of protocols, appreciated that they were prepared to respond when disclosures occurred, and they did occur. And the last thing I would say we've learned is that there's still a lot to learn.
Well, I have another question for you, Ann. One of the things that I wonder is what has the domestic violence community really learned about healthy marriage relationship programs and approaches?
Okay. Because Patrick's giving me the sign, time's up, I'm going to answer that really quickly. I think we've learned that there really is a considerable amount of common ground, that there are services and supports that healthy relationship and marriage education programs can offer to some of the families that we are working with, and we need to make those referrals carefully, and that we really are all about safe and healthy families, and that gives us a lot of, I think, motivation and the importance of our working together. I think is really underscored.
Well, so just give it 30 more seconds to answer this
friend.
Question. Has healthy marriage programs changed as a result of interacting or their considerations around domestic violence?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's provided a wonderful opportunity for us involved in domestic violence advocacy work to have partners in raising awareness of domestic violence. They are helping they are helping to provide information about domestic violence to people, and a lot of that is framed as you may not need this information, but you may have a friend or a colleague or a neighbor who needs domestic violence information. And obviously we want everyone to know what to do when someone tells them that there's abuse going on in their relationship. So to the extent that these programs are helping to equip more people to understand the resources that are available in the community and feel more confident in responding when someone discloses to them, that's a good thing.
What about design and approaches? If you looked at healthy marriage designs and the approaches to help them understand how to address issues of domestic violence, can you speak a little bit about that?
We have, that's another positive opportunity that's created in the partnership, is we have had the opportunity, Marlene is going to talk about this a little bit more later, be thoughtful about how domestic violence information is incorporated into different curriculums and how to make sure that it is presented in ways that don't compromise safety and that really enhances people's understanding and their ability to access the services that they might need.
Thanks, Dan. We're going to move to our two other panelists. We're going to move to Cassandra Coates-Johnson and Lisa Nitsch. And Anne had an opportunity to be able to talk about the important work that needs to occur within communities. You know, you have to have these partnerships between domestic violence organizations and healthy marriage programs. And so we are fortunate enough to have such a program relatively close to D.C. in Baltimore. And so with the House of Ruth and the Center for Urban Families with my friend Joe Jones. And could you talk a little bit about each of your programs and what your roles are in each of your programs?
The House of Ruth Maryland is a domestic violence prevention agency, started in 1977. We started as a one-row home in Baltimore City and have since then expanded to a 24-hour hotline, an 87-bed emergency shelter, transitional housing. We have a full legal clinic, and we offer victims, children, and children's counseling in several areas in the community. The program that I work most closely with is the Abuser Intervention Program. I run the Gateway Project, and that sees about 600 men a year. We do have a intervention program for women, but the one that I coordinate is the one for men. We see about 600 men a year, the bulk of whom are court mandated to the program. We consider it a psychoeducational program, which is a bizarre term to say we use therapeutic technique to provide education.
The Center for Urban Families is a grassroots nonprofit organization located in Baltimore, Maryland. I'm the director of family services. We provide three different types of programming. I'm responsible for the healthy marriage programming. I run the Building Strong Families Project. The Center for Urban Families provides workforce development programming, and we have a responsible fatherhood project.
Okay. I'm going to ask you three questions, and for me, what I'd like to do, instead of asking you all three questions, I want to ask you each one of these questions separately and get a response from you. And the first one is a big one. What convinced your agencies that you had a need to work together?
The history of Center for Urban Families and the House of Ruth goes way back. We actually got introduced to each other in about 1998, but I think it was in 2001. Lisa, and you can chime in, that it was the family, let me get it right, Family and Community Violence Prevention Project that really kind of, you know, brought us together. And with that partnership, the Center for Urban Families incorporated domestic violence protocols into our Responsible Fatherhood Project then. So this goes way back before the healthy marriage work that we got involved in. And that kind of, you know, introduced us into the world of domestic violence and what that meant for some of the fathers that we were serving. And we've, you know, taken that road all the way up to now.
Mm-hmm. And really, it started casually as seeing an overlap of clients that we were serving. We're both in Baltimore City. And sort of a need that the House of Ruth knew that we needed to be engaging men more effectively around issues of domestic violence. And at the same time, the Center for Urban Families were looking for a way to respond better to domestic violence. So it really was a natural partnership. But the project that Cassandra mentioned really brought us together formally through mostly an alliance between the Fatherhood Program and the Abuser Intervention Program of the House of Ruth is probably where it started, and it's grown since then.
My second question for you is also an important question. What were the first steps that you had to take? What were those first steps like in terms of your developing this partnership with each other?
Well, I think we started with just kind of an information sharing, getting to know, you know, what each of the organizations did, what our goals, what our focuses were. And we actually had kind of an outside facilitator come in and do some sessions with each of our organizations to kind of tease those things out. And we were able to identify the areas that Lisa just talked about. We were, you know, serving overlapping fathers at that point in time and now serving overlapping couples. You know, kind of where our common ground was, and mentioned that as well. But then it also gave us an opportunity to kind of know where we have philosophical differences. And, you know, as opposed to just, you know, brushing those aside, actually tried to talk about those and then decided that we need to work together more so that we could build more common ground.
Yeah. I think the most helpful thing that we did was we did case studies. Before we started working with real families, we started with case studies of, if this family presents with these issues, how are the two agencies going to respond? And we did find lots of areas where we had to agree to disagree, but that didn't mean that neither of the agencies could serve them and we couldn't continue a partnership.